Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today, 941-877-1552, or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Alana Marks is a writer, international lecturer, and TV radio host working in Boston and Sarasota for over 20 years. She trained as a stage actress in London and acted professionally in addition to writing, producing, and directing theatrical productions. Alana wrote The G-String Theory, a book about her hilarious trip through the paradoxical sensuality of India. And she recently wrote Mind the Gap, a story and concept which first came to her in a dream. Mind the Gap is a psychological comedic film which explores the nature of reality and perception, a spiritual, profound, independent film. What happens when you mix psychology, quantum physics, and spirituality with fun entertainment, intrigue, and a meaningful story? Well, you know what you get? You get Mind the Gap, the film. The synopsis of the film goes like this. Addie, a 38-year-old Broadway actress, is on the verge of success when her Playboy husband walks out on her. As a single mother with little income or support, her relationship with her young daughter becomes strained and her life begins to unravel. While working in London, Addie has mind-bending experiences which spark off her journey into the gap. She begins to peel away the facade of personal dramas, finding answers, and reclaiming her life. As she moves into a new reality, the audience follows her deeper down the rabbit hole, encountering hilarious twists and turns along the way. Mind the Gap is directed by Thomas Jackson and Alana Marks, written by Alana Marks, screenplay by Alana Marks, produced by The Umbrella Project and Valencia Motion Pictures. On TV and radio, Alana Marks has interviewed hundreds of authors, musicians, celebrities, politicians, and has moderated debates at a state and national level. Alana founded the Umbrella Project, which is producing Mind the Gap, a feature film, In the Gap, a documentary film explaining the science and philosophy behind MTG with some of the top thinkers in the field of physics and metaphysics. And Yogina, Lana's animated children's book and digital games. The Umbrella Project, in association with Valencia Motion Pictures as well. Alana speaks four languages. And from living, working, and traveling in five continents, she brings an authenticity to her work, drawing on her many wonderful and mystical adventures all around the world. Alana Marks is a director and producer known for Tarzan in 1999, Mind the Gap, of course, in 2018, and Space Station 76 in 2014. The film's soundtrack of Space Station 76...
Wait, I have to stop you on that, Ray.
Sure. Oh, okay. That's...
If you don't mind, it's just there are two people with the same name on IMDb who have got their work mixed up. So in the interest of disclosure, that the Tarzan and the Space Station are not me. It's somebody else.
Oh, really? Exactly yes. The same name. That's a very...
I know. It's funny, both in movies and the same name, because Ilona Marks is a very unusual name. So it's funny. But don't want to mislead the audience.
Sure. I thank you for that. Thank you very much. Well, continuing on with that, here's what the industry experts are saying about Alanna Mark's new film, Mind the Gap. Okay, the role is readying itself more and more for your kind of consciousness. Your film should be trending well. You're an inspiration. This is from Senior VP from Universal Studios International. There is a great movie in this. I like the reveal and the specifics of the characters will be key when the twist is revealed. This is exciting. From a Warner Brothers executive, Alanna Mark is a vibrant and thought-provoking woman who brings valuable and penetrating insights. That's from the Daily Telegraph in London, UK. I love it. It's so grounded, emotional, and real, very beautiful and meaningful, such lovely writing and real living characters. I'm very excited about your movie. Editor from Parenthood in Manhattan. And this is a beautiful film. You're truly inspiring. From an Emmy Award-winning editor. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome filmmaker, writer, producer, author, and talk show host Alanna Mark to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Alanna.
Hi, Rand. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Ah, you're very welcome. I'm sorry we had got you mixed up with another Alanna Mark.
No, it's fine. I could have taken the credit for all of that, but then that wouldn't be right.
well, those movies didn't do very well anyway, so, you know, maybe it's a good thing. How long did it take you to make this film from, say, screenplay to final production?
Yes, this is interesting because the film, as you mentioned, the film first came to me in a dream that I had about 10 years ago. So I saw the whole thing in a dream, and I can explain more to you about that in a minute, but that's about 10 years ago to now. We're wrapping post-production. We just have to insert the credits, and then we're done. So I'd say about 10 years. I did take a break in between for a few years while I was trying to figure out how to write the ending of the screenplay, because it came to me in a dream, and you know how dreams are very magical and mystical and aren't always easy to understand and explain
exactly.
In words?
Yes.
Well, that was what happened here. I was shown something that is so thought-provoking and such a different paradigm and other dimensional that I didn't know how to explain it using the words and the thought system that was available to me and available to us in general. So I wasn't sure what to do with it, and I didn't want to fake it. I didn't want to write it in a way that wouldn't be authentic. So I just put it away for a while, and I left it alone and actually forgot about it for a while. I just had the last three scenes to write, but I just let it go. And then a couple of years later, I went to a silent retreat for about 10 days. And after sitting in complete silence for 10 days, no talking, suddenly I understood what the dream was trying to tell me and trying to share with me. And I came home very inspired, and I finished writing the last three scenes. And then tried as best as I could to translate it into film so that we could give over that incredible message and twist and reveal that is available at the end of the film.
That's an incredible story because, you know, most dreams you can't remember when you wake up, you know, I'm like that. I can't remember my dreams, even if it's like a wonderful dream, I forget. So.
Well, what I do is I really love my dreams, and they've been a source of a lot of inspiration for me over the years, and I do a lot of dream analysis. So when I wake up from a dream, I always write it down so
right.
that I will remember it. And sometimes it takes me a couple of years before I understand it. Mm. But I find the more I do it, it's kind of like a muscle. The more you use it, the better you become at it.
Right.
So that now I just get incredible information, like almost otherworldly information that comes to me through dreams that turns out to be so accurate for what's going on in my life. So I love the dream world,
mm-hmm.
and this did come out of that place. So I'm very grateful for it. And you know, a lot of inventors. Say that they got their invention from the dream state. For example, the Singer sewing machine inventor, his last name was Singer, he saw the whole way of how this needle should have the hole at the bottom and how it should go up and down in a dream. It all came to him in a dream, and he was completely stumped on how to fix this problem of how to get the sewing machine working. And the ancient Greeks had dream temples that they set up when people were ill physically. They would bring them into the dream temple and help them heal through understanding their dreams. So there really is a ton of information available to us if we are going to grasp it and look into it. So I'd encourage you, start trying to remember it, write it down.
Yeah, I have wonderful dreams. It's just, you know, for some reason I forget about them. You know, and I try to remember, but I just can't remember. I'm going to start writing them down, like you said.
Yeah.
there's some good stories in there.
There's some great stories in there.
Yeah.
I'm sure that many movies are born, or books, or poetry, or music. You interview so many musicians. I bet many of them come up with the lyrics or find their inspiration through dreams that they have.
Well, yes, they have told me that. Yeah. I wonder if you're more in touch than, like, the normal person. Are you in the metaphysics, and are you a very spiritual person?
I enjoy that. I've always, since as a little child, been very curious about why I'm here. Like, I've always asked the question, what am I doing here? Why am I here?
Right.
What is this planet? What is the meaning of life? Are we just, like, running around like little ants? Are we puppets in some larger game? Do we have a purpose? Is there no purpose at all, and you're in a body, then you die, and it's over? I've always really been very, very curious about that question as long as I can remember. And I feel like everything that I've ever done was set in along a path of trying to answer that question. And I feel like Mind the Gap is just such a beautiful gift to me. I've learned so much from it as it's unfolded. And I know that the audience that saw it at our sneak peek preview had the same experience with it. They said that it offered answers to these questions, not just presenting the questions, but actually answering some very profound questions. So I always feel like if people have either ask the question, what am I doing here? What is the meaning of life? Who am I? Then they would love Mind the Gap. But if they haven't ever asked that question, and you know, some of your listeners have thought, wow, I've never thought about that before. I don't care who I am or what I am. I don't care why I'm here. I just need to pay my rent and pay my bills. Then they really should see Mind the Gap. So I think either way, it either takes you into a deeper level or it opens up a new world.
I think it's interesting, too, that, I don't know, did you get any training in the art of filmmaking at all, or it just kind of came to you? You just kind of went through the motions and learned, you know,
well,
all the job-type training?
I most of my training was for stage acting. I trained in London for many years ago. I trained in London at a drama school there, and I acted professionally as a stage actress for many years. And I had parts in small films, but my passion was always really for stage. And then when I moved to America, I still continued acting on stage, but I started getting involved in Boston with radio and television and started hosting radio and started hosting TV. And I found that I really, really loved that. But when I first wrote Mind the Gap, I wrote it as a stage play because that's what I'm more familiar with. Mm-hmm. And from there, I consulted with screenwriters to try, and one in particular who was great, and I consulted with her to turn it from the stage play, screenplay, into the for film. It's a very, very different thing in film. Very different. So it was a combination of learning along the way, although my path has always been to do with stage, radio, TV, film, anything to do with the media I've been very involved with.
Oh, you can definitely make it into a stage play as well. You know, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, it could That'd go. It could go back to that, and maybe one day it will go back to that. It does lend itself to that, especially now that they have sort of special effects available for yep. stage as well. You can do some wonderful things on stage with multimedia nowadays.
Well, one question I guess filmmakers don't like to hear is under and over the budget. How was your film? What were you over budget, under budget? Did you, you know, was it right on? How did that come out?
You know, the budget in a film is a very scary place.
Yes.
Because even the most simple films are so expensive. It's crazy. I would say that it cost more than I thought it would. Mm-hmm. Everything costs more than you think it's going to. But we were fortunate in that, first of all, I co-produced it. But second of all, pretty much everybody who worked on the film felt like they became inspired and passionate about it when they read the script. And they wanted to be part of the project. So I think if we didn't have that, if I was just making, you know, some regular horror film or some film that they didn't right. feel inspired by, they maybe would have wanted to be compensated way more and, you know, not had that passion and love for it.
Right.
So that was pretty amazing to be working with people who were sometimes equally excited about it as I am. But again, you know, we had 100 people on set, and you've got to feed everybody. Every 6 hours, you've got to provide a meal, and you've got to have snacks going all day. Food is by far the most expensive part of of filmmaking. It is so expensive, just catering, you know, for so many people every single day. You know, you start thinking, well, what water bottles cost, you know, what bottles of water.
And yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, this was a pretty good-sized production for an indie film, you know, and for this is was this your first attempt at a film?
Yes, it is my first film.
It was a pretty good-sized production.
It was very industrious because
yes.
You know, we filmed in London and we filmed in New York and in Orlando, so. So, yes, taking it into so many locations and in such, but it adds such a great, I'm so pleased we did,
mm-hmm.
we did do that because it adds so much to the film. It takes it into a whole different level.
And the main characters in the film, I mean, there's a lot of actors. I mean, there's a
yes.
lot of people in the film. But, like, the main cast members, they're not completely green. I mean, they have acted in other movies before.
Yes.
But they're not where you have to pay them. Yeah.
Well, our actors have been absolutely, our actors are wonderful. I think we have an ensemble cast, which is really mm-hmm. fabulous. In a lot of films, the actors who are playing the smaller bit roles
right.
Or the supporting roles, you don't always remember them or notice them so much because they're not so essential to the film. But in Mind the Gap, every single actor is completely essential to the story. And they just did such a fabulous job. We did have to go non-union on the cast, mm-hmm. with the cast and crew because the SAG rules for the union are so prohibitive. Like the things you have to go through as a small indie production, you just can't do it. But some of the actors were so excited about the film and wanted to be in it so much that they were willing to give up that union membership to be able to be in the film.
That's huge. That's huge, yeah.
I mean, if it wasn't for that, we had a few actors who are actually very, very well known.
Right.
Very well known, who wanted to be in the film. I approached mm-hmm. them and sent them the script, and they loved it, and they wanted to be in the film.
Right.
But they wouldn't be able to give up their SAG membership for whatever reason. Everybody has their own mm-hmm. reasons, and it wouldn't it wouldn't behoove them. So they couldn't be in it, which was disappointing. But I was also happy to be able to offer actors who are so talented the opportunity to do it, even though they're not as well known as some of the people who I originally thought would be able to be cast because of all the union rules and regulations.
What was the hardest thing about your job, and how did you approach that?
I think not sleeping for months. When you put out a casting call for auditions and you get sent thousands, literally thousands, of online auditions, and I'm like 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, watching auditions right through the night, and this is well before even official pre-production began, because casting the film is so key. And we held in-person auditions as well, but we got so many online auditions, and we found quite a lot of our actors that way. But it's very, 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 very exhausting. And you go from that into hiring all the crew. So, you know, you're just on the phone constantly. And from when you're so exhausted you don't think you can move anymore, that's when official pre-production starts.
Wow.
And when you really can't move anymore, pre-production, then production starts. And that's when, you know, you film for, well, we filmed for a month, and we filmed for a month in before we moved to London. So really, I would say that if I got an hour or two sleep a night, it was a lot. So I'd say that was by far the most difficult thing of my job, was holding everything together. There were some days where, by mistake, the wrong people got called, the wrong actors got called. They thought they were on a different scene was being shot that day. And I would have to do a rewrite. You know, when they call for 7:30 in the morning and the wrong people are showing up, I've got to rewrite the scene because everything is set, everyone's ready to go, the crew's there, everybody's ready to go, but we don't have the right actor. So that was very, very, very challenging as well. I have to do like an emergency rewrite on set.
You wore so many hats in this. It's incredible.
Yes. I know. And, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about indie filmmaking, is that people do play multiple roles. Although there's a lot of very, you know, Woody Allen. I mean, he even acts in his films.
Yeah.
So it's quite astonishing that he can direct, produce, executive produce, write, and act in it. I could never have acted in this. I had no interest in acting in it as well. That would have been way too much. But yes, I did wear a lot of hats, and the whole thing was actually very stimulating, very exciting, very creative, but also very stressful and exhausting. But that's the nature of film. You know, you've got peak highs and peak lows.
Well, once you get this one under your belt, you can do the next 100 will be a piece of cake.
Well, exactly. That's the thing. Is when it comes time for the second one, if I do write another one, I already know who I would hire again. That's like half the battle right there, having a good, solid crew and cast. So, yeah, you're right. I think it probably gets easier and easier and easier, as with everything in life.
I think so. It's just like, you know, I can't believe I've done close to 2,000 interviews. It's just, you know, one day you look back and say, how did I do all that, you know? And
I know. Isn't that the thing, like, wait, how did I get this old?
Yeah, exactly. Why am I walking in a walker right now?
I know.
What happened?
The only way we can figure out that we're getting older and that time's going by is because, well, for me, I look at my kids and I think, wait a minute, they're big. How did this happen? So if they're big, I guess I must have gotten older too. But, you know, but it's a good thing. I'm sure, like, you love what you do, and when you love what you do, it doesn't feel like work. It really doesn't feel like work to me when I'm, you know, hosting radio or writing. I could sometimes write for 20 hours in a day. I rewrote the screenplay 21 times before I had the final one. I mean, that excludes the rewrites on the spot. But I didn't feel like it was work writing it because I just enjoyed it so much.
Mm-hmm. Now, this film, everyone says, has a very remarkable twist to it at the end. How did you come up with that, and how did you know when it was done, when your twist was, you know, felt right for the film?
Well, the twist I saw, the final reveal is what I saw in the dream, and
okay.
That was what I could not write, because I didn't understand how to translate what I saw in the dream for that twist
right.
into words, and then from words into a screenplay, and then it was too much. And that's why I had to take a few years off until it came to me. Were you asking, just ask that part of the question again?
Well, when did you kind of walk away after you knew the twist was completed, when you knew it was right?
Are you talking about in the actual making of the film or in the writing?
Probably in the writing.
So, yeah, in the writing, I knew what I wanted to do and what I wanted to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because we're an independent, low-budget film, I couldn't do all the special effects and VFX that I would love to have done to
right.
be able to do it exactly the way that I saw it in the dream. But it's still able to convey what the message is and what that final messages will make people go back, I think, will go back and watch the film again and go, oh, okay, that's why this happened. That's what this means. That's why this character said or did or whatever.
Right.
So until you see the end, the whole film is this really fun but very profound. It's got a lot of quantum physics concepts in it. It's got a lot of spirituality. It's got a lot of entertainment. It's actually a comedy, even though it's a lot of psychology.
Mm-hmm.
But when people watch the ending, everything's going to kind of come together. Like it will be cohesive and all make sense for where it was going.
And you told me earlier that it had some Seinfeld kind of moments, some Seinfeld kind of humor in it. Is that,
yes.
is that right?
Yes. Yeah, I know you said you also just really used to enjoy watching those Seinfeld episodes in the old days. Before binge TV and before streaming, we used to have to wait a week in between for the next show to come out.
Right.
And I always waited so excitedly for the next Seinfeld episode because I just loved the characters and I loved the writing.
Mm-hmm.
And,
good writing.
Mind the Gap definitely has a very similar feel to it. The characters are very eccentric. Now, during that reveal that you're asking about, we find out way more about the nature of this eccentricity of the characters. But the characters are very funny, very self-absorbed, like the way they are. You know, in Seinfeld, the characters are so self-absorbed, and that's part of the humor of it, you know?
Right.
They all are. Kramer and George and Elaine, they're all just very, Jerry, I mean, they're all incredibly self-absorbed characters. So Mind the Gap has got a very similar kind of feel. It's funny and eccentric, but the difference, and the reason why I said it's probably Seinfeld meets Woody Allen, is because Woody Allen he's very funny too. His films are comedies, but there's a depth to them and a psychology behind it that is very intriguing and very captivating. So I think it's like a combination between the two. There's actually even a little bit of it. I would even say this is a very old film. It became kind of a cult classic kind of a film. You remember My Dinner with Andre?
Sure.
Do you remember that film? Yeah. So that's just two people sitting in a restaurant just speaking about
mm-hmm.
life.
Right.
And I always really enjoyed that film. I was young when I watched it, but I always really enjoyed that film. So when I was writing Mind the Gap, at first I was thinking, are people going to be interested in these kind of concepts about life and meaning and the universe? And then I would think back on that film and think, You know, that film captivated, I don't know how long it is, maybe it's an hour and a half. For an hour and a half, people sat and watched two guys sitting and talking in a restaurant, and it was captivating. So if the dialogue is interesting and there's a good story, you don't need millions of dollars to tell that story. And that's what I really held in my mind as we were going through this. Mind the Gap is a great story, and it's simple, but it's very, very, very profound, and it's entertaining, but it's deep. So it's got that paradoxical sense to it, which I think is why people are reacting the way they are and just loving it and saying how different it is. Everybody says the film feels so different. It's very unique. And that's what I'm hearing over and over again.
I can't wait to see it. I mean, you know.
I know.
You're really building this up, and I want to see it now. I can't see it now.
I know.
I'm a big movie buff, And I love those types of movies as well. You know, I'm really into that.
Well, I have to tell you, before we had our preview, they wanted me to show it in Orlando and I was a little bit nervous to do that because
right.
I'd never shown it to anybody before. And when you're working on something so closely and you're sitting for 48 hours straight in the editor's room and going through it frame by frame and cut by cut, you really lose track of, is this a good film or is it just my imagination thinking this is a good film? And you can't really see clearly anymore. So when they approached me and asked me to show it, I said, no, I don't think it's not finished yet. I don't feel comfortable yet, and no one's seen it yet. So they said, well, can you send us a little bit of it so we can look? So
sure.
I sent them a few clips, and when they saw it, they said, yes, it's definitely ready to show. So we showed it, and really, I did a Q&A afterwards, and the audience absolutely loved it and could not stop asking questions about it. But for me, sitting in the audience, I was sitting in the back row in the dark, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is like about to be the first screening. It's terrifying. Like, what if nobody laughs? What if nobody likes it? What if? But then I decided to just relax and enjoy it because I was seeing it for the first time ever on the big screen. And the speakers were Dolby Atmos speakers, so the sound was beautiful. And just watching it come to life like that on the big screen with this beautiful sound, and the audience started laughing from within the first 30 seconds, and it was so captivated that it just really felt like it was being birthed, and it was beautiful.
Did you make an official trailer of the film yet?
We're still making the trailer. It's not completed yet.
Right.
So if there's anybody... Well, I'm trying to find somebody to finish off the trailer. Making a trailer is really an art.
It
so
is.
We've
yep.
got it to a certain point, but it's not finished yet. So hopefully it will be done soon, because I'd say it's about 95% done.
Trailers are interesting. Some of them just kind of ruin the film because they show you too much. You know,
I agree.
And then you say, I saw the trailer. It's why should I see the movie? You know?
I agree. That's why I'm saying a trailer is really, there's an art of trailer making, which
exactly.
is very different to an art of filmmaking, because you want to give people enough that they can see substantively that it's a film they would like to see. But,
right.
as you say, you don't want to give away so much, because then what is the point of seeing the film?
Exactly, yeah.
And then you've got things coming out of context. So you don't, I know these characters so well, but if somebody's watching this for the very first time ever, they don't know who these people are, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So... you only have a minute and a half to try and condense an hour and a half of film into a cohesive story and to put it out there in an exciting way. So
exactly.
it's very, very tricky, which is why I don't have a trailer yet.
I just had a trailer made for my first book, and that was interesting. You know, I mean, you can spend lots and lots of money to get what you want, or you can say, well, I just want to get it out there, you know.
Yeah,
and I did the I just want to get it out there version. You know, cause
I know.
I was going to spend thousands of dollars for that.
It's a dilemma, yeah. isn't it? When
it
you
is a dilemma.
Write a book or make a film or make a new CD or whatever, do
yeah.
you want to keep going forever and try and get it perfect? Or do you want to get it out then? There always is that question. Do you want to go with distributors, or do you want to try and self-market? There's so many. It's so tricky, really. I have been finding out that now that I'm talking with other independent filmmakers, that the film festivals really are quite a scam for filmmakers because they charge you all kinds of money to enter the film festivals, which indie filmmakers don't have to begin with. Now you've got to pay all sorts of money, $50 to $100 to enter. They get thousands and thousands and thousands of entries. They only pick one or two films. Yep. Not one or two, a few. They only pick a few films. And then the filmmaker has to give a talk or a workshop when they're there, and you have to fly there to be at the showing. You've got to pay for your accommodation. And they don't give you anything that comes in at the door from the audiences. So it's not very kind to filmmakers. So I am trying to sort out a way to distribute this film that does not include... it doesn't feel right to make a lot of money off the back of somebody else. And I'm sure record labels do the same thing, and I know that publishers do the same thing.
Right.
But it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel good to the person who creates the product.
Right.
To be kicked out while somebody else is making all of this profit off of your work and not even attempting to compensate you at all for it. So I'm sorting out how to do that. I don't want to do it in an upset or an angry way. I just want to find out a way, an optional way, something that will be maybe like a new paradigm for how filmmakers can start distributing their work. And I think for musicians, they've got YouTube, and you can just upload your new song, and then anybody can hear it. So things like that have really changed the market for musicians, artists, and artists in general.
Yeah, it's tough for everybody. I mean, authors, musicians. We're all kind of in the same boat. But I would think filmmaking has got to be even tougher. I mean, and the other thing is, how do you get it out to the global market? Because you want people in England and in Europe to see this film, you know? How do you get it over there?
It is tricky, and one of the things that I'm considering doing, which I think I am going to do, is to make it available through streaming on my own website or the film's website, and people can watch it that way. See, with me, I feel like this film's very different. It's followed a very, very different path from the beginning. I cannot believe that it actually has happened, that I actually have this film made. I really can't believe it, because every step of it was so unusual and so different. And the feedback that and support that we got, not only from industry professionals but from local people all along, has been very validating, that there is something exciting here with this film. And so for me, the message of what the film teaches and for what it ultimately gives over is such a gift, like I said, it's such a gift to me, that it really is a gift that I want to share with the world. And so I'm going to focus on that, and I'm going to focus just on, I know that people will want to see it, and I know that it should be seen because it offers so much. So however that happens, I'm just going to, let that go. I'm going to see how it unfolds in the same way that every other aspect of it has unfolded, because I know it will. It has to.
You said you've been approached, too, by some of the big studios but you're kind of, maybe a little bit reluctant with that?
Yes, I have spoken with studios, and I've spoken with a very, very well-known independent filmmakers and directors who were interested in it. But I decided to do it as more of an indie grassroots effort, because that's the nature of the message of the film.
Right.
So it's not about the glitz and glamour of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very real film that everybody, regardless of the demographic, can relate to. And I found people who, like, I had young men in their early 20s coming up to me after the screening and saying they felt like it was written for them personally. They could relate to it so much. And then there were women in their mid-60s or 70 years old saying exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
right.
It crosses age barriers. It crosses gender gaps because it's a message of truth, of the essence of who we are. It's the essence of who we are. So, you know, you may be a male. I don't know how old you are, but you're a male of a certain age. I'm a female of a different age. But the essence of who we are is all the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I found that because I've gone and lectured all around the world. I've really lectured in many different continents all around the world. And I found that to be true in every audience that I spoke to. Everybody's looking for the same thing. Everybody wants love and wants to be loved. Everybody wants to be happy. So underneath this pursuit for money and fame and wealth and cars and houses and everything else that we think we want, it's really only our ego mind that's telling us that we need that and want that.
Mm-hmm.
But in our essence, that's not who we are, and it's not what we really want, and it will never make us happy.
Right.
Because if it could make us happy, then all celebrities would be very, very happy, not searching, when they become famous and make millions of dollars off the sale of, you know, their what do you call them, their platinum, gold, or whatever CD. It doesn't work that way. We're all looking for more depth, and it seems like this century, especially, people seem to be waking up, and the message of Mind the Gap is very, very pertinent to this century of people starting to wake up and starting to say, you know what, all that other stuff, it doesn't matter. All that other stuff is what I thought I wanted. But
right.
I want to be happy. I want love in my life. I want to know what my higher purpose is. I want to know who I am and what I'm doing here. And Mind the Gap fills that, answers that question in a lot of different ways.
It's a very personal film for you, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It really is. And I mean, even the title, The Gap, is a very, very interesting concept. And it's, again, on so many different levels. Because I don't know if you've been to London, but anybody who's listening who has been to London and who's ridden the underground, it's called the Tube in London,
right,
will see the sign on the platform. It says Mind the Gap. And the conductor's voice is in the trains every stop saying, mind the gap, please mind the gap. So this, on its most basic level, is where Mind the Gap, is what Mind the Gap relates to. But then we also start looking at the gap between words and the gap between thoughts. And in music, there's beats and then you've got a rest. Because if everything was just fused together, there would be no gap, then nothing would make sense. So if you read a book and there's no spaces, there's no gaps between the words, you wouldn't
right.
even be able to make sense of that book. If music
right.
didn't have any rests and beats and was all just one big, it would be a mess. We wouldn't know what's going on. So we really look into that as well, the difference between something being one and fused, but something having a difference. So that difference, and that gap, is a very, very interesting, very life-affirming, very exciting, very playful place
mm-hmm.
to be that we ignore. We ignore the negative spaces. We only look at the form, but we don't look in between the forms. Some artists do when they're painting. You know, they get a sense of that.
What was your talk show about in Boston? When you had your
talk
show?
Well, I started off, it's kind of a funny journey, because I started off as interviewing political people, like people
right.
who are running for office.
Mm-hmm.
So I interviewed people running for Senate, for Congress, for local. I interviewed some people who were running on the presidential ballot. and I moderated debates in Boston. So it started with that more or less. And then when we were in between, you know, there's only an election every 2 years, luckily. Although it would be nice if there was an election every 10 years with all the craziness in politics.
I know.
But in the in-between times, in between elections, we still had to fill the space. We still had to, you know, had to come up with a show. So I started expanding more and doing social issues. So we would speak about things like domestic violence, alcoholism, that sort of thing. And always with the attempt to try and help enlighten people to there's another way. You don't have to always be doing things the way that society's told you you've got to do it. You don't have to believe what you're being told you've got to believe. So we started doing expanding the show to that. And then after that, after being on TV for a while, a commercial radio station there called me up and asked me if I wanted to do my own talk show on the radio. So when I went to do that, I decided that given my time slot, which was very, very early in the morning, like, who wants to get up in the morning and listen to politics right off the bat? So it gave me the idea back and forth with them, maybe I should do something that's more conducive to early mornings, to waking up slowly. And like, so I started, my father actually happened to be visiting at the time in Boston. And so he said to me, when I told him that the radio station just offered me this time slot, he said to me, well, you love dreams and you love dream interpretation. Why don't you do a show about dream interpretation and people can find out what their dreams mean because they're just waking up out of their dream.
Right. That's excellent.
Yes. So it was perfect. It was perfect. So I started doing that, and it picked up very, very quickly because back then nobody in New England was talking about anything to do with that world. It was considered crazy or the occult or fantasy or imagination or whatever people want to call it, but actually most people have a big interest in it if you scratch a little bit below the surface. And so we developed a very big following very quickly, and then I started doing more and more and more shows. But I had on a lot of alternative healers. I had on spiritual leaders. I've interviewed also, you know, thousands and thousands of writers, musicians, authors, leaders, politicians, and I love it.
Yeah.
I really love it, but I stopped doing it because I was trying to write the film, and writing is really a full-time thing. So I stopped. When I moved from Boston, I had a radio show in Florida, and then I stopped doing that altogether because I had to focus on writing the film. But maybe one day I'll go back, and we'll be on the air together, Ray.
Oh, that'll be wonderful. I'm really into all of that as well. And I ask a lot of the guys I interview, a lot of the music legends, you know, questions that other people won't ask. And I always ask them about, you know, extraterrestrial life. Do you believe in extraterrestrial life? Do you really think that, you know, we're not alone in the universe and things like that? And most of them do.
Do believe in it, you're saying?
They do believe in it, and many of them have actually seen UFOs in their lives.
Well, so, it's not surprising. I mean, the idea, don't you think it's really very, very pompous of us to think that this tiny little speck, speck of the Earth,
in the whole Milky Way,
in a whole galaxy, in a whole universe, and who knows how many galaxies, untold number of galaxies, to think that we are the only form of life is, to me, beyond comprehension.
Impossible, you know? They've been coming here for years, and it's, you know, I really do feel that the government doesn't want to panic, because, you know, people... Be honest with you, there's some people that just can't take it, you know, and they will go nuts. Look how some people feel about Trump. I mean, if they can't handle Trump, how are they going to handle aliens from another planet? You know,
I agree, and people have got, we've been given some kind of ego mind preconceived idea of what an alien is, and so we've decided that an alien has to be a little green guy with big eyes running around, wants to kill us.
I know.
When there are so many higher life forms out there that actually want to help us heal and are looking at us on Earth here like absolute idiots running around, killing each other, war and poison and red tide and the nonstop violence and the poverty. This Earth is so fertile, yet people can't eat.
I agree.
So we're worried about them. They should be worried about us.
Probably why they don't. Maybe they don't want contact with us. You don't want people to know.
I know. Would you want contact with a race of beings that just go and kill each other?
And you know, if they come here, they're higher intelligence, you know, than us for sure. You know, because for them to travel all that distance and get here, why don't they ever have clothes on when they have pictures of aliens? You know, they're always without clothes, no spacesuit. I mean, I don't buy that.
I know. Well, we make everything very literal because our minds are so small. What percentage of our brains are we actually using? We're using about 5% of our entire brain. And we only know what about a very, very tiny fraction of this universe is. The rest they call dark matter, but they don't even know what dark matter is. Nobody knows what that is. But they're talking about it like they're experts. Nobody knows what it is. Same way, we don't know what's going on in the rest of our brain. Very little of the DNA strands are used, and the majority of our DNA strands are not even being, it's junk, which is junk DNA.
Exactly.
So we have developed this little picture of what these people look like. We've made it very literal and very real, and we can't imagine that there might be a life form out there that doesn't need oxygen, doesn't need water, mm-hmm. but could be breathing some other substance in the universe because they don't have the same physical body structure needs that we do. So we're very limiting in what we believe and in what we accept. And we mostly just accept what we read and what we see without thinking out of the box. But we live here in Florida. Dolphins.
Go ahead.
Are a very, very advanced life form. The amount of love that people experience when they swim with the dolphin, it's phenomenal.
Yep.
They are such beautiful beings. But yet we think, oh, it's a fish in the sea. Who cares?
Yeah, I've swam with the dolphins, and you're right. They're beautiful animals. They're so intelligent, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of insects, animals, different types of animals. I mean, we don't study them enough. If you look at ants and the way they follow each other and you know, like they're marching, and they all work together, you know, to pick something
to
up.
To build a community.
It's amazing, you know.
Yes, we could learn from that. We don't know how to build a community. Ants, as you say, they all work for a common good of helping each other out. But we, humans, try and figure out how to knock each other down and how
it's a shame,
to
isn't it?
Destroy each other's land and places. So, you know, the Native Americans have got a very beautiful expression. They say they drew a circle and excluded me, so I drew a bigger circle and included them,
mm-hmm.
which is very beautiful because if you think about it, that's what humans do. We shut everybody else out. We're xenophobic and we don't like this one because of his color or this one because of his religion or this one because of his political persuasion.
Yeah, exactly.
We put all these circles around ourselves and shut everyone else out. But that's not what higher thought form beings do. A dolphin will swim with you whether you're pink or blue or black. It doesn't matter what religion you are, what country you come from, if you're male or female. They don't see those differences.
Right.
We see them because we are very limited humans with a very, very limited thought form.
And then, you know what's scary? Why do dolphins and whales beach themselves? That's, to me, that's what, you know, why?
Yeah,
you know,
well, do you have a theory?
Is it our fault? Is it our fault that they beach themselves? Are they mad at us, you know?
Yeah, I don't know why, but I can tell you that if I was a dolphin swimming in these polluted oceans, that, I mean, we've turned our oceans into garbage landfills.
It's terrible. Terrible.
So if I was a dolphin, I don't think I'd want to hang around here too much either. I'd be like, you know what, I tried to help them. They weren't interested. I'm going home.
I talked to, I asked this question a lot, and about, you know, do you believe in UFOs and whatever. Chris Squire, who passed away, he was the bass player from Yes. And Chris told me that he thought that the UFOs that we're seeing are us from the future. That's what he thought.
Oh, that's
interesting. We're coming back in time.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because time doesn't actually exist, time is a construct that we've made here on this earth. So we've decided that we've got past, present, and future. But in eternity and in infinity, there is no such time constraints. When you go out into space, it's different. Time works differently. People age at a different rate when you go out into space than they do here on the earth. So, you know, the idea that we think time is linear and that this happens and then this happens and then this happens is also quite a fallacy, because we don't understand anything about the nature of time and the infinite nature of time. So if he's suggesting that, you know, his belief is that they came back from, that they're from the future coming to see us, it's entirely possible if we were able to understand the broader nature of time. But I don't know, I don't know what he meant, or I didn't hear him say it, so I can't really comment on what he meant. But I think it's possible that we can move forwards and backwards in time. We just don't know how to.
I think so. I think it's going to be possible, or it's already possible. I don't know.
Well, dreams do that. That's why dreams are so exciting to me, because in dreams you can go forwards, you can go backwards. One of the trips that I took, which resulted in me going to India, and which was the reason that I wrote the book, The G-String Theory, one of the reasons for that was I had a dream, and in the dream I was shown a place in New Zealand where I had to be, and I was shown where in Australia I was going to be. I was shown the whole thing in the future. And so when I woke up, I knew that I was being shown that I needed to be there. And within a few days, I got contacted and asked to come and speak in those very locations that I had just dreamed. So
it's
very fascinating.
Yeah. Are you into transcendental meditation?
I meditate a lot. I don't do specifically transcendental meditation, but I do meditate. I love silence. All of my talking here on the radio, you would never believe that I love silence. but I think that we really get to meet our higher thoughts and our higher self by being silent and by being quiet. Because when we spend our days just chattering away, we aren't really coming in contact with the potential of who we really are and what's really possible. So although I don't do transcendental per se, I definitely meditate, and I try and do it every day.
Alana, here's a question that I ask all my rock star friends. I've always liked Field of Dreams, the movie. That's always been one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
And it's all about, you know, granting a wish. And if you had a wish, if you had a Field of Dreams wish to collaborate with anyone, you know, from the past or present, who would that be?
If I could collaborate with somebody on making another film, are you speaking about?
It could be film. It could be somebody famous that you would, you know, love to work with or pick his brain or, you know, anything like that.
Well, that's a good question. Now, can this be somebody who's already passed over and is not alive
anymore?
Of course.
Of course.
Wow. I don't know. Okay, you got me into a silent meditation. I'm going to have to meditate and come up with the answer to that. Because, you know, I don't, like, immediately what comes to mind is I can think of a list of all these different famous directors and famous writers, but that's not what it would be. It would be somebody who has really reached a very enlightened state, like the Buddha, or an avatar like Sai Baba, or it would be somebody who's really come into their fullness of themselves so that they are self-realized. That's who I would like to collaborate with the most.
Okay.
So I'm not exactly sure who they are, but I know they're not in a body. Although, you know, if somebody shows up in a body who is a great person to collaborate with, I'm happy to, but I think it would be somebody who's already fully self-realized. That's what
gotcha.
That's my goal for collaborating.
How about favorite director, favorite filmmaker?
I think that Steven Spielberg is very, very, very talented. I think that he makes incredible films. I think he's made a big difference. But there are, you know, he's obviously is very well known, and he seems like an obvious choice. But I do admire his work. I know also that Woody Allen is not very popular at the moment because he, you know, of all the issues.
Right.
Surrounding his private and personal life. But if I don't look at that and I'm able to separate that, whether that's true or not, if I can separate that from his work, he's a very brilliant movie maker and very admirable that he's able to bring so much pathos and psychology in such an entertaining way. So I really admire him as well, his professional work.
Well, wrapping up, what's next? What's the next process in the film?
The next process is going to be to get the film distributed so that people can watch it all over the world. Because, you know, because of the film does cross the boundaries of age, gender, nationality, religion, it is a film that should be global and will be global someday. So the question now for the next step is, how do I get there? I'm not exactly sure. So that's where this spirit being that I'm collaborating with that you asked me about is going to have to show me the way to the next phase of how to get the film so that everybody can watch it. Because Mind the Gap is definitely a film that I know is going to get out and will get out somehow. I just don't know exactly how yet. So, you know, if you've got any suggestions or anybody listening has any suggestions, they can reach me through our website. Which is mindthegapfilm.com.
Right.
So we have a contact page there. If people want to go to mindthegapfilm.com, they can reach us and let us know and be part of the process. This is a grassroots process that everybody's welcome to be part of.
And you're thinking about maybe a possible premiere here locally in Sarasota, is that correct?
Yes, I would like to do the official opening here. I enjoy being here very much, and it's a great city for the arts and in many, many ways. So, yes, I would love to do the official opening screening here. And I think what we'll do is do a big event. We'll have food, we'll have music, we'll have a showing, I'll give a talk, and we'll have a screening. And then I think we'll use that template and that model to take it all around the world. So if people want to invite us to come to their city, we'll go there and we'll show the film and answer their questions about it and have food and music and a lot of fun.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind it's going to be a big success. Good things, you know, take time. And I think you're on the right path. I think it's amazing everything you've done. You're kind of like the Beatles. You know, the Beatles never read music, but they produced this fantastic product of music, you know, and you're the same way. I mean, you know, you haven't been doing this very long, and look at the movie you made. It's incredible. So I think it's going to be very, very popular, and it hits home to what people want in a film, you know.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate those kind words and wishes. I also do believe in it. So thank you. I appreciate that.
And anything I can do, I will be there. And we'll, you know, I think the next big thing is marketing the heck out of it, just like anything else, you know.
Yes. And from what I understand, you're pretty good at that. So
I try. It's not always easy, but.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. It's always fun to speak about Mind the Gap. I love speaking about it. So thank you, Ray, and thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you. We can't wait for the premiere, and I'm very, very excited to see the film.
Thank you so much. Look
Take
forward
care.
To having you there. I'll send you a ticket.
That'll be wonderful. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
For more information about Alanna Marks and her new film, Mind the Gap, visit www.mindthegapfilm.com. You can also find her on Facebook, www.facebook.com/mindthegap, the film. Very special thanks to the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of the Ray Shasho Show, which is now called Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And please, subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interview. And it's real news, people, not that fake stuff. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and the Wacky Family Business, available now at Amazon.com. You will live it. And there's a trailer of my book, a new trailer out there on YouTube. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.